Before we get into this week's edition of the Bloom Files, I wanted to squeeze in a couple of quick seconds and talk about our sponsor for this week, Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Now, if you excuse me, I got some case opening to do. Truth is out there. And here, who knows? But either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, an X-Files rewatch slash first watch podcast. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here, squeezing our way into your podcast feeds to talk about a doubleheader episode of X-Files from season one. Real freaky deaky couple of episodes. And I am so happy to break it down, not only because of the episodes, but because of the person I am breaking down the episodes with. Of course, my guide to all things X-Files right now, as I'm trying to figure out what the hell is going on with this series, my lovely wife and partner on this case, Angela Bloom. Angela, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Confused yet?
I mean, like, not confused as much as, like, unnerved, which I suppose is sort of the purpose of
it. Plus, I think, I mean, it was probably a fairly easy watch to watch season one, episode three, squeeze from a perspective of understanding things, but then jumping like 15 episodes into the future, you know, and then having to understand sort of what's going on, maybe not as much of an easy transition, but either way, I think we enjoyed it.
I was trying to prepare myself for it. But yeah, as we talked about in the beginning, and as Angela just mentioned, we have a little bit of like the alpha and the omega of the X-Files season one, in that we have, and we're going to be covering today, season one, episode three, Squeeze, and season one, episode 21, Tombs, the Tombs duology, I suppose. And we're going to be getting into everything from the episode. We're going to cover them both in their entirety. So this is your warning. Right now, if you have not seen either one of these episodes, we're going to spoil the heck out of them, but we are going to keep spoilers vague for future episodes for those of us like myself who have not seen any of the X-Files up until this point. But if you want to hop out and watch these episodes now, they're available on Hulu, YouTube TV, and a slew of other streaming services. So be sure to check them out, because right at the top here, Angela, as hopefully our people who want to remain spoiler-free jump out at this point, I do want to ask, you know, is this the Tombs duology? I can only assume the way that the Tombs episode ends, he does not come back.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it. Tombs is done. But yeah, I honestly even think it was a surprise for a lot of people that, not a surprise, but like, oh, Tombs is back, you know, when the episode 21 comes out.
Yeah, it's a weird instance here because, you know, we're talking about a character returning. I don't know, when this happens sometimes in more Monster of the Week shows, like, I usually expect it to happen in, like, later seasons.
Mm-hmm. And that's the case with the X-Files as well. This is an instance where it does happen in the same season.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. And I think, you know, I was doing some research on this, and I believe even the writers themselves of these episodes were like, yeah, we never write sequels on anything. So we were a little surprised when Chris Carter's like, yeah, we need more Tombs. Bring me more Tombs,
yeah,
baby.
I guess with Chris Carter, he was also very, I don't want to say enamored with the actor, but really liked the vibe that he was giving.
Obviously, the lead antagonist of both of these episodes, which links them together, there's a reason clearly why we're talking about both these episodes in one podcast, is Eugene Victor Tombs, played by Doug Hutchison, who I did not even realize until I really, you know, put two and two together. He is someone who I know, not personally, but I know well, because for Lost fans out there such as myself, Lost devotees, he played Horace Goodspeed, one of the OG 70s into prime Ben Linus days people as part of the Dharma Initiative. Maybe to those outside of Lost, he has probably a more infamous reputation for his relationship and marriage to Courtney Stodden, who I believe was 16 years old at the time married, and he was about 34 years her senior, I believe. So suffice it to say, I could understand the vibe that Chris Carter got off this guy, because I do think this is a bit
a little predatory,
hard imitating life in, and a little bit of the creepiness that Doug Hutchinson, to his credit, really does bring to this character.
Yeah, and I do think also the reason that we're covering both is obviously when I thought about what should we talk about as the next episode in our series, I said, okay, well, we need to talk about the first Monster of the Week episode, which is Squeeze. That's the first time there's a Monster of the Week episode where it's not related to the series arc or whatever. So season one, episode one and two, you know, they're talking about aliens, they're talking about blah, blah, blah. And yeah, all of a sudden,
it's pretty crazy. We went from, you know, hey, here's an alien abduction that, you know, is affecting a graduating class that happened to be partying their asses off in the woods, to like, yes, there is an ageless mutant.
Yeah, exactly.
Every 30 years to eat livers.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very like Silence of the Lambs type vibe.
To the point where I believe Doug Hutchinson said he actually channeled his performance of Eugene Toombs on Anthony Hopkins.
I see that.
And I could very much see that as well. Even though you and I both noted that Eugene Toombs sort of resembles like a young Michael Keaton.
Yeah, he does. Especially in some of the creepier moments when he's like trying to squeeze through the windows, and very weird look to the guy.
There was so much weirdness going on, because I think if you had told me, and this goes back to what you said in our very first intro podcast about the use of practical versus CGI, I think if you had told me, like, okay, they're going to run into this guy who is able to, like, physically squeeze himself into any enclosement, my first thought, honestly, would be, like, an Odo from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, or, like, Alex Mack, you know, like, someone who can turn into, like, amorphous
goo. It's this guy who can, like, literally, like, just, like, contort his body into small shapes.
And that's not fun.
No, it's disgusting. And he also has the most disgusting yellow contacts in most of the series.
Well, listen, he's covered in a lot of yellow stuff over the course of these couple of episodes.
Bile.
There's so much bile. Yeah, but as someone who has been very upfront on these podcasts about how much I don't like body horror, yeah, the stuff on, you know, his shoulders are cracking and he's slipping his way into the chimney like very some sweaty, like, Santa Claus.
Very like the Ring girl.
Yeah, very much like Proto Samara.
Oh god, do you know her name?
I do. We know each other very intimately, myself and Samara.
Weird. But yes, I
1 week stand if you
I'm curious to sort of hear what you think about the episode in general from a perspective of, you know, how you see it in the X-Files.
Yeah, because it does seem like, you know, these do seem like sort of separated events, even though obviously they have the thread of evolving the same character. But I am starting to see a bit of, like, more of what was really brought up in that pilot of, like, essentially, Scully has made friends with the nerd in the school, and now she has to figure out, like, okay, she left the popular kids behind. Is she still going to hang out with them, or is she going to defend her new nerd friend?
And is she going to be a rule follower, or is she going to not follow the rules?
Right, and that's seen really in the second episode, right, when Mulder is becoming borderline obsessive with his, like, adamancy that Toombs is really dangerous.
And he's right.
And he's right, but, you know, he's breaking all these rules to do so, and Scully is
unconventional forms of investigation.
Yeah, you know, 24-hour stakeouts, etc., and Scully pushes back against that initially, but it does seem like, to your point, by the end of that episode, like, she is throwing herself under the bus.
Yeah, I think she really crosses the line where previously and up until this point in this first season, she is sort of toe in one pond, toe in the other pond. You know, she's like,
wow, those are two very close together ponds.
Yes, they are. I like, didn't even know how to react to that. I was just like over it. But yeah, I do think that
his
and her pawns. Yeah, that she's up until this point been able to play both sides of a really staunch scientific investigator who's still trying to, you know, debunk things in one way or another, and then someone who does sort of trust Mulder and feels like Mulder is somebody who, you know, is deserving of that trust and isn't a liar and isn't somebody who's just crazy. You know, so I think in the second episode, she is somebody who is saying, I'm on his side. And even in, we noted there's a scene where they're in the car together during the stakeout, and she's like,
she brought him a sandwich.
She brought him a sandwich, but she says, you know, I, you know, to the effect of like, I wouldn't do this for anybody but you. Like, right. I believe in you.
I mean, she gives him a first name basis by the end of the second
episode. Yeah, she calls him Fox and he's like, no.
My parents called me Mulder, which is weird.
I don't think they did. His mom definitely calls him Fox in later episodes.
I was going to say, that would be very strange considering that if you share the same last name as someone, wouldn't it be odd to call them by that last name?
I think he's just saying he hates the first name Fox, which... fair.
Well, I think it's also what I've been starting to determine from Fox Mulder is that he is so sarcastic all the time that he's very hard to read in terms of
is he being serious or
exactly in terms of sincerity, which I guess maybe is sort of like the guardedness that he puts up as well.
It's a wall.
Maybe also part of David Duchovny's performance.
I think so, but I do think there are moments when you can tell he's being sincere as Scully, whereas like either there are other times you're like, okay, clearly he just doesn't want to talk about this.
Is it Fox Mulder or is it David Duchovny who is like so dry? You know, we're about to talk about a very sweaty person in but I do feel like at least Mulder is like just an incredibly dry character in terms of his like wit and performance.
I think that that's one and the same, David Duchovny, Fox Mulder. Like, I think that the character of Fox Mulder is coming from whatever he's bringing to the table in so far as like they wanted somebody who is a bit of like an outsider, a bit of like, you know, thinks he's too cool for school in some regard. But I think that sort of dry, sarcastic wit is coming from the delivery that David Duchovny gives. And I think also from a perspective of, you know, let's make sure that this character is consistently evolving, you sort of see that happen throughout the series and the seasons.
All right, well, let's go through these two episodes. And, you know, I don't think we're going to take 2 hours on this. We can sort of go, you know, a little more overall sketchiness rather than, you know, scene by scene, even though there's some really good stuff. And I mean, speaking of sketchiness, yeah, so we open here and we open on like this rando guy walking to work, and then there's a little Pennywise
down there.
I was like, oh wow, I guess they did it. I mean, I guess I wouldn't say they did it before it, because there was a mini series of it and obviously the book of it, but I was
the
like
book of it.
the book of it. But I was surprised. I was like, oh wow, I guess Chris Carter is like really just outright utilizing this.
Well, that, and I think that there is something just tangentially a little bit creepy about somebody staring at you from somewhere you don't know they're looking at you from.
But yeah, but the Tombs is going to use a lot of the sewers in these couple episodes. Like, maybe he was the fifth Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Maybe that's what...
He's
like,
a mutant, after
exactly.
all.
Like, maybe he was a mutant turtle. They were trying to create a new
timeline. Doesn't match up.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, I guess that's true, because he is over 100 years old.
He's over 100 years old. But we see, yeah, this pair of glowing yellow eyes in the sewer, and they sort of capture on to this guy, this businessman walking. And whenever Eugene Toombs looks at somebody that he's going to, like, steal their liver, he sees them in slow motion.
Yeah, there's, like, weird, like, Toombs vision, where in the first episode, it's, like, slow motion. In the second episode, they add, like,
black and white around.
Yeah, like a Sin City thing where everything else is black and white except for the person, which is in color. So, yeah, I guess, you know, you really have to put yourself into the freaky mindset of Eugene Toombs. I'm just, you know, it was an odd choice. And maybe it's because we're also about to experience, you know, a lot of slow-mo going on with the theme song, which is the first time we're experiencing it in this podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But essentially, you know, this guy, I think his name is Usher. He is, you know, working late in the office. A lot of people working late over the course of these two episodes. That apparently is who Eugene Toombs is targeting, the overworked, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess people that are, you know, alone.
Yeah, which is weird, because you would think that, like, stress would, I don't know, like...
make the liver not as tasty?
Exactly. Like, I don't know much about butchery, but isn't the thing, like, you don't want to, like...
I don't think it matters what kind of liver he gets. I think it matters that he gets his quota of livers. So, like, going after somebody who, even in the second episode, they say, like, Mulder's like, he's not going to kill the old couple because he doesn't want to put a target on his back. But then he's forced to kill a psychiatrist because... you know, he doesn't have anybody else to get
the hunger.
He needs it.
This guy, Usher, dies. I don't know if the implication is that, like...
Usher dies.
Those are his confessions. I guess the implication at first was like, oh, why? How could this be happening? I think it's clear by the end of this, he just does it randomly, right? Outside of, like you said, like, as long as he's not doing it suspiciously.
The mystery is how and sort of why, not necessarily
who.
Like, who he's attacking. It's how he's doing it and why he's doing it.
But the opening sequence does close out in a mysterious way, right? Like, we don't see actually what happens. All we see is, like, a dead Usher, his coffee spilled, and then
the screw's going back into the grate.
And so what I thought I would do, Angela, is when these episodes happen sometimes, after the cold open, before we go into the theme song, maybe I'll make a habit of, like, writing down what I think is happening at the moment. The one I did for this episode was
I'm curious.
I said magical screwdriver.
Oh, baby. It's like Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was an invisible screwdriver, because all I saw was a screwdriver.
You did have, you were hung up a little bit on how he did that from the backside of the grate.
Yeah, because I don't think that's how screws work.
They do if you can get to the end of it.
I guess so. Like, you can, like, take your little fingers and, like,
yes,
unscrew it. Because usually I'm used to the big end of the screw unscrewing.
Yes, but I also don't think it's that important.
I don't know. Well, so my initial thought was that maybe Eugene Toombs was some sort of, I don't know, invisible handyman.
Right, Well, he is in the service industry.
Exactly. I mean, he handles maybe not necessarily tools, more so animals.
Dead animals.
Yeah.
Roadkill.
But so I've talked about this before. This is our first instance of course, the famous theme song of the X-Files.
Yeah, what did you think?
I mean, it's a very, like, I love the echo behind it all. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's almost done as like a weird, like, ghostly, I don't know, serenade slash yes, weird whistle tone.
Our dog did not like the whistle tone. She was very upset with that. And then what did you think about the visual?
Yeah, so there's some interesting stuff, right?
It's not good.
It almost seems like they went into, like, these random, like, video clips and were like, let's just type in the word weird and mm-hmm. see what comes up. And so they found, like, oh, that thing you put your hands on at the science center.
Yes.
You know, I think it's like a plasma ball is what it's called.
Yeah, and then, like, also, like, handprints and, like, weird, like, squidgy things.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of, like, freeze frames going on with, like, stills of Scully and Mulder. And then, you know, we finally get our thing, our big, you know, final, I guess, I don't know what to call it, like, credo of the X-Files. You can probably speak to that or not. The whole truth is out there.
Yes.
But, you know, I finally see it. And I'll be honest, Angela, the first thing I think is, like, that's kind of a crappy font.
Yeah, no, the visuals and the graphics of the beginning are not good. And I think they're going for, like, and we talked about this in our first episode, a very, like, Law and Order-esque vibe to mm-hmm. their, whether it be their title sequence or the bottom third stuff that they throw in there. Like, they're going for that, like, crime scene of the crime.
Yeah, I guess just as surprised by it, because, like, I don't know, again, this is the 90s, they are yeah. probably not used to, like, grafting these fonts on. Maybe I'm just a bit of a font shamer, but I'm looking at it being like, this looks like something out of, like, if someone was making a video for, like, student class president in the 90s using their parents' video camera, that's the type of font they would use, right, in, like, that proto yeah. movie maker stuff.
And it's funny, too, because I think we discussed this while we were watching, or I mentioned it maybe briefly, because I do try to, like, keep my little mouth shut, but I can't.
Your mouth is so little.
It's so tiny. But I mentioned that they don't change the title sequence until, I think, at least season 8.
Yeah, that was really surprising to me, because you talked about in the first podcast that, like, people get brought onto the main cast, but they're not shown there.
They're shown, for example, we meet him in the second episode that we watched. Assistant Director Skinner. He is a main character. His name is Mitch Pileggi, which I find funny because it's Pileggi.
Yeah, do you think, like, there was a chance that his descendants and your descendants got, like, in different lines in
no.
Ellis Island?
Maybe, but yeah, I mean, my maiden name is Pileggi, and it's very similar, so it always used to, like, really throw me off. But it only shows up in the beginning, like, when the cold open starts or something, mm-hmm. and it's in the bottom third, and it's saying also starring, and it'll say his name, and it'll say anyone else that's, like, a continuous star. But yeah, no, just David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson.
Well,
just them.
So, we don't start this episode with David Duchovny, but we do start with Gillian Anderson, and here's another that guy, Donald Logue,
mm-hmm.
not Donald Logue, Donald Logue, playing, I think, Tom Colton.
Yeah, he plays, like, a big old douche.
Yeah, and he really sort of is, like, the prototypical, like, you know, working
like
his way up,
boy,
working his way up the ladder into, like, you very much talked about this when we were watching the episode, like, the FBI bro culture is definitely
yeah.
palpable in this episode.
Yeah, and somebody who's just a ladder climber. Like, when you join the FBI, like, there are probably people who are very dedicated to, you know, uncovering, you know, mysteries and solving crimes and, you know, really contributing to society. And then there are probably also people who just want to be, like, the moving up from rank to rank to rank, because
right.
that's, like, satisfactory to them. It's the same way you find somebody at a bank, you know, or a law firm, and they want to become partner. And that's, like, I think his entire driving force is that. So, you know, he invites Dina onto his investigation of of this whole murder. And he does that because he knows she's good. But he doesn't realize that she has her toe in that other little pond.
Right, exactly. It's the conversation is very much like, man, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah,
for
like, that. Come and hang out with me for a while.
Yeah,
he feels
like he's doing her a favor, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm allowing you to do some quote-unquote normal stuff.
Real
but
work.
But the normal stuff in this case are 10 murders where people's livers were ripped out with their bare hands.
Yeah, exactly. And so she definitely, and she brings both her along, like, just sort of the assumption that he was invited, which I thought was a little wild.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, I had really had a lark with the whole idea of Spooky Mulder, but no. The nickname is a reality.
Yeah, his nickname is Spooky Mulder.
But
it's derogatory. It's what everyone calls him, like, behind his back.
Sort of, but, like, it just feels...
And he knows it.
It's not a good nickname.
No, it's not. But, I mean, these guys don't seem like they're, like, the coolest, most creative people in the world.
I was going to say, you would imagine that hopefully people solving, like, our nation's top crimes would, to be a little more creative than, like, oh, he's Spooky Mulder.
Yeah, I don't think that Spooky Mulder is something that he probably, like, aspires to be.
Yeah, though maybe he like, really buys into the nickname, right? Like, maybe eventually he gets custom-made Spooky Mulder bowling shirts that he uses in his league.
It's a great nickname. Stop being mean to it.
No, I mean, listen, you know, if this podcast takes off, if Potion Recaps launches a merch store, maybe we'll have some Spooky Mulder merchandise available for people who want it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It's
or
a good idea.
If ideally, it would be, like, a Disneyland name tag situation where, like, we have... Spooky blank and all the names that you could possibly imagine, so you can pick out your name.
I like that. Yeah, so I think that, you know, where do they go from here? They're sort of investigating the crime, and Mulder immediately, and this is, like, very, like, okay, Rain Man, a little bit. He goes in and he just, like...
Well, no, Rain Man was the first episode,
Rain
I believe.
Man was the first episode, yeah. So I think that he immediately, it's funny because he goes in and he's like, I see, you know, that this glass was tipped over or something, and, like, leads him to the grate. And so then he, like, dusts it for fingerprints and, like, finds a fingerprint, but it's very elongated.
Yeah, it's very super long.
Yeah, and
it's
so
hot dog, not hamburger.
And you would think that what's his face would be more happy that he helped him,
but Colton, he's not. I think he's just more so like he's still sort of
he wants to be the guy.
He's on the case that he's like, oh, he's coming in here and doing his spooky stuff.
Yeah, or and he also knows that. And this is, like, talked about a few times in these episodes that, like, Fox Mulder was considered, like, the best of the best of the best.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that Colton's probably, like, sort of has a bit of an inferiority complex here. So he gets upset when, like, he comes to steal his thunder. It's very childish.
Well, so, you know, the liver stuff, I am still very intrigued by. Because from what I read, again, it seems like it wasn't really done with any sort of, like, purpose. Chris Carter was literally in France eating foie gras and was like, wouldn't it be funny if there was a creature that, like, just ate someone's liver? Like, I know Scully's trying to make up some BS about, like, oh, the liver possesses regenerative qualities, and this is a symbol of a killer trying to purge himself of his sins. But,
well, yeah, she says that to try to, like, make it seem like maybe it's not supernatural.
But even from a meta perspective, this is for the lulz.
Because
it's so random. Otherwise, I don't know.
Like, the heart would be the more obvious. Like, you would think, like, if somebody needs...
What is the most desirable body part, if you have...
Well, I just think if, like, somebody has... I think the issue, though, is that with Toombs, it's a genetic flaw that he doesn't produce enough stuff, and so he needs the livers. Like, it's medical.
So it's more so about, like, what the liver produces and less so about, like, oh, if I had to pick an organ...
Yeah, he
I
doesn't get to
liver.
Choose, and that's why his eyes are yellow, because he's... Have you ever seen,
like,
somebody
cirrhosis.
That has, like, yeah, exactly. So I think that that's more the issue there.
So my question, though, is, like you said, he's not a man of discerning taste, but do you think he should be?
Yes.
Like, shouldn't he be doing background checks about, like,
I just think that would be too far.
What's the heavy drinking on these people, you know? Like,
yeah,
do they
potentially.
Have liver conditions?
Yeah, what if he, like, cut somebody open with his, like, hand and is just like, oh, this liver is totally messed up.
Well, plus, could he just, you know, maybe in another life, he could have just gotten a career as, like, you know, a coroner who's just gotten his hand on some liver. And just like chow down in the back room.
Yeah, but you don't want a dead liver.
I don't know. He had like 100 years to work on it.
But also, I wonder how much of this is like for him, not just about survival, but sort of the hunt.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the hunt, so
the hunt is on.
He does get captured here, so they have a stakeout.
Very quickly.
Yeah, they have a stakeout.
Did you think it was done?
No, I mean, listen, you look at the time of the episode, like, something's gonna happen here. But they have a stakeout in a parking garage that has these interesting, there are no pathways. It seems like they just have, like, portals. It almost looks like circles cut out in the walls.
Oh, yeah.
I only noticed that Mulder
notice
does
that.
A leap through him at
he
one
does,
point.
Yeah.
It was very
it's
fun.
Just like the concrete, the way it's poured. Yeah.
I don't know, I just love Mulder parkour. I mean, we're talking about pouring concrete later on.
Yes, well. But yeah, they find him in an air vent.
Oh, and he's so sweaty.
He's so sweaty. Like,
this is one of the most moist men I have seen
it's
in real
disgusting.
Life or on screen in quite some time. I mean, the first episode was called Squeeze, and it took me until your guidance to realize what it meant, because I more so thought, like, okay, there's a squeeze bottle of water that they're spraying on this man in between takes.
No. It's because he's squeezing into things and squeezing out of them. It's not a great title.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah. I
it's
mean,
okay. It works.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you called him, I mean, if you called the first episode Tombs, I actually wouldn't have been.
No, I don't think that would have been good, because you need to.
Oh,
like,
I guess, yeah. I guess we didn't figure out it was Tombs until
they didn't solve the murder yet.
Yeah, because otherwise they'd be like, well, clearly it's Tombs. His name is in the title.
Yeah, exactly.
So, speaking of Tombs, he's going to get under a lie detector test here, and Mulder sort of slips a note and probably a fiver
yes.
to the person conducting the investigation.
The
here.
Very, very droll lady who's doing
well,
that.
I wonder if, and maybe David Duchovny, this is sort of like his second calling, is like, I guess you have to be very monotone to not
yeah.
put any emotion
she
in
she looks
voice.
Like she hates her life, though. She was not happy. And then even when she's giving the results, she's like, he passed with flying colors.
Maybe this is like what happens to the Tom Coltons of the world
yes.
when they don't move up. Like
yes,
you get,
they become
you get
lie detector.
Back to lie detector.
Yeah, and like even
doctors.
At this time period, are lie detectors considered like admissible in court? Because I don't think they are currently. Like, I don't think you can use them as evidence anymore.
I don't know. It's weird because yeah, I believe the discourse on lie detectors nowadays is like they are. It's not that they can like tell when you're lying. They can tell when like somebody feels like they're lying.
Yeah.
So if they believe it, then
which
it's
is
the
why
truth.
They're not used as evidence, because you can easily have somebody who's like a psychopath who like thinks that they're telling the truth, but like
right.
it's not the truth.
Not the case with Eugene Tombs here.
But he is a psychopath.
He is a psychopath, but he does falter on Mulder's rando question about
it's not even that he falters, he just like pauses for a long time.
Yeah, and which, you know, the FBI sort of writes off as like, well, yeah, you asked him if he was 100 years old. That's a weird
yes.
AF question.
Well, Colton does. Everyone else is like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Scully and Mulder have a little bit of a tiff here. There's an interesting
mm-hmm.
moment where Scully's like, Mulder, you're being a little bit territorial over me. And he like stops to fix her necklace. And obviously the necklace
yes.
is going to become more pertinent later on. But that was
even so, though,
weird.
I think the way he does it is very personal. And it's like, this is only like maybe the third time that they've had an investigation together. Like the second episode, they do stuff, but it's not like this is like a formal investigation. And he's just like in the field, like caressing her necklace. A little odd. If somebody got that close to me and I was just like a coworker with them, I would be like, okay. Personal bubble.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all right, I don't feel about you that way, at least not until another season. Like,
even that, I would just, even if you did it out of nowhere, it would still be confusing.
Right, well, I think it's...
like, what you doing?
Mulder does sort of seem like the person, though, like, there was, like, a spot on their cheek. He might, like, lick his thumb and rub it
yeah,
off
Yeah, because he
know?
Just doesn't have a sense of, like, propriety.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, I think he also doesn't feel great about humanity in general.
No,
especially
no.
with the humans that he worked with in particular.
Yeah, for sure. But either way, I think at this point, nothing that they have, they can't hold Victor Tombs, right?
Yep. So Victor Tombs is let go. And so he does a lot of like awkward slow-mo jogging. It reminds
mm-hmm.
me of like that old Dane Cook bit of when, you know, you're at an intersection and you're trying to let pedestrian pass by and they like are pretend that they're running, but they're really taking their sweet ass time. That is like the perennial jogging mood of
yes.
Eugene Tombs.
It's very weird, but he works for the...
He works for Animal Control.
And he still has his job with Animal Control at this point?
I don't know. It's weird, because in the next episode, they're going to say that, like,
he
lost
can have
his,
it back. Yeah.
He lost his job, but it's clear that he has the van still.
Well, so I think he loses it at the end of this episode.
I mean, that makes sense. When you get arrested for
and put into
attempted
prison.
Murder, you probably lose your job.
Don't get to keep your job.
But yeah, this
kill.
Is definitely, I think, Tombs' creepiest moment of the episode. And this is when it outright gets confirmed that it is indeed Tombs, because he's following this other man who has, like, you pointed out, one of the most awkwardly lit houses.
Yeah, it's
I've
so
ever
weird.
Seen.
The inside of his house is like a rave. It's got like uplighting in like five different colors.
Maybe he wants to bring in the mood.
And then
a little
he like
after
walks
hours.
Through to the living room through these like double doors that are like frosted glass. Like, I think it's very like Art Deco 90s.
I don't
decor.
Know. I'm so intrigued by this man. I'm like, I want to live in his house. And
was this guy single?
I'm assuming he was, because he was all alone. We're going to get to the family man. There's so many bald men that
there are
goes
a lot
after
of bald
as well.
Men, yeah.
So this is bald man number two, I believe.
Yeah, because the first guy was bald, and then there's the guy with the big shoulders in the later episode.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about Big Shoulder Man.
Really alarming.
So basically, you know, he slips down the chimney.
Oh, yeah, he does. He goes down like a tiny chimney, and then the guy's like, I'm going to light a fire.
Yeah, which, and listen, we've watched The Santa Claus. There are less gruesome ways to go down the chimney than the way Toomes
yeah,
does.
Yeah, well, and I think that you're supposed to think that Toomes is still in the chimney because the fire won't light, but in reality, he's already out, and he's right behind him.
Yeah, do you think he, he's like, no, about this. Let me just sneak around and go back to... I mean, he's going to do that in the next episode, too, right?
I think he came down it already, and then I think was just... Because he's covered in soot.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I thought maybe it was like a Home Alone situation where he attempts to go down the chimney, gets an obstacle in his way, and is like, all right, I guess I better sneak into the house.
No, I think you're supposed to think he's still in the chimney when the guy's lighting it, so that it's like, no, he's going to burn him up. But then it's like, no, actually, he's already in the house, so this guy's toast.
So as that guy is toast, much like those logs that he was attempting to burn, Mulder starts to get to the bottom of who Toomes is. Which is a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Basically, Toomes, or at least...
Well, so yeah, the first thing to note is that he found that fingerprint and then matched it up to one that was in an X-file that had never been solved.
It's like when you're doing a PowerPoint presentation when you're a kid and you're like trying to fit a bunch of images together. You're like, okay, if I just stretch this one out.
Well, yeah, he does that later too. But even initially, he's just like, oh, I recognize this fingerprint, pulls out the X-file, and it's like the stretched out fingerprint matches one that's in an X-file where... Over 30 years ago and then 60 years ago, there were sequential murders.
Yeah, there were five murders of people getting their livers carved out. And then 30 years passed with nothing. And then the same thing happened.
Yeah, all in the same area, like in around the Baltimore area.
Yeah, and...
Powhatan Mill.
Yeah, and Mulder says he muses that Toomes' first murder was apparently the guy in the apartment above him. He says he must have been playing the Victrola too loud. Really great turn of the century humor from
Hilarious.
Mulder there.
So yeah, they figure out that he's in this apartment building and... Probably still there.
Yeah, exactly. But they're going to get some help here as after just a really choice mimeograph montage of them just staring. Mm-hmm. Which I will also note, we really liked the round glasses look on
the microfiche.
Mulder and Scully. I think they're gone in this episode. I'm pretty sure at least Mulder's glasses, he no longer rocks the Harry Potter frames.
No, but they both still have very 90s glasses.
Speaking of changes, though, we should note, Dana Scully rocking different hair than the pilot.
Yeah, this is the hair I was talking about. I remember you saying that you really liked her hair in the pilot, and I was like, oh yeah, her hair did look good. But I recall for the majority of the first season or two, she has this bob, and I'm not a fan.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just the more she gets close to the X-Files, the more her hair gets cut short, right? She's changing her
right,
look.
But it's all weirdly wavy and curled. It's curled under, so it's very 60s housewife.
Yeah, I don't know, but I also thought that she had a different hairstyle even in the next episode we're going to talk about as well.
She did, yeah.
So I don't know if this is just a typical first season of a show. Every episode they're like, all right, let's try this hairstyle on you, Jillian.
Well, and I wonder how much time had passed between the pilot in the second.
That's true as well, because they usually do make a pilot and you wait until you get picked up and then you sort of go back to the drawing board. Maybe the other hairstylist was, I don't know, out of the country or something when they were filming the first season.
Right.
But they're going to run into a guy, Frank, I believe his name is, a retired cop.
Yeah, so Frank is a retired cop who was on the case of Toomes 30 years prior. Mm-hmm. And Frank... basically is traumatized by this. He knows it's Toomes, but he couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, but sort of he's traumatized by Toomes because it serves as a microcosm to him of all the atrocities committed by humankind.
He basically thinks that he is pure evil. This guy represents evil, is evil, and he couldn't kill him and he couldn't get rid of him. And so he feels like he failed.
It's just interesting because I did not anticipate the X-Files to go in that direction.
No, and I don't think that it necessarily needed to in this episode. I feel like with Frank's character, it's okay, we get it. You're a little too invested.
It's a little odd for just him to be yes, this mutant who eats livers does remind me of the Holocaust.
Yeah, so okay, rough stuff.
But Frank is, this is, to your point, something that I think he just doesn't get out of his head. We're going to get to his hunches in the next episode, but he has a little footlocker of things from the Unsolved case. He's got a piece of the liver in a jar.
Yeah, he's got a piece of the liver in the jar. He has one of the knickknacks or something like that, and he says he always takes something, and then that reminds them that yes, he took something from Usher's house.
Right. So they're going to go into this, this abandoned building, which is allegedly his
Exeter
nest.
Street.
Yeah, and his nest to see, you know, all the knickknacks to put him in the paddy wagon.
Yeah, so they find his nest, which is just a bunch of newspaper and bile.
Yeah, and rag. The worst paper mache product
with
you can imagine.
With bile. Disgusting.
Maybe he was just, when he was growing up in the 1900s, he like had to do that for a project, like make a volcano. And he's like, you know what? I could live in this.
Yeah, maybe. That's how it happened.
It's natural insulation.
And it smells gross.
Yeah, and it's all natural, too. Like, you don't feel like you're harming the environment when you're using things that come from the human body.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I don't know how good of a paste bile is anyway.
It looked like it's pretty sticky.
I also love Mulder, like, as he even vocalizes, like, temporarily betraying his cool exterior by being like, okay, even I feel like this is effing gross.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just like, this is weird. But they figure out that, I guess, he hibernates in there.
Right, so this is where, again, he sort of has his, like, Rumspringa of liver and then hibernates for every 30 years. And it's like, oh, I'm feeling rather peckish. Time for more liver.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it must be, like, timed for him. Like, he's almost like an animal more than a human.
Well, going back to it, that seems very, you know, pertinent, right? Of like, a certain amount of time passes, then he will come back out. It's like bears.
How do they know?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. He's like a liver-loving bear.
Liver-loving bear.
So, you know, essentially, as they pointed out, he has little treasures, I suppose, little souvenirs. Mm-hmm. Again, you'd think there might be meaning behind it. There really isn't. It just seems like he grabs something that's like in the room from when he kills.
But yeah, like a token.
Apparently he does this sometimes preemptively.
Yeah, that's
because
so stupid.
He has Scully's necklace.
Yeah, so while they were in there, Scully thinks she gets snagged on something, but really it's Toombs was there.
Right,
and he
like
steals her necklace.
Spider-Man style, I'm seemingly like hanging from the ceiling on a web made of bile.
Exactly. And so Scully goes home. And then I forget how Mulder finds the necklace. Like, I guess he goes back?
Yeah, he was in the nest, and then he just sort of found the necklace.
But why was he there by himself?
Because it's Mulder.
Yeah, oh, right.
He's like,
okay.
All right, I got a hunch here. And, you know, he has a little bit of a confrontation with Colton
here.
Oh,
that's right.
Because Colton, essentially, well, Colton's going to confront Scully. The plan is that they're like, okay, something's going on here. Let's get Colton's men to stake out this Exeter Street. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? And Scully has like a fantastic burn of like, hey, you're climbing the ladder so fast, I can't wait to see your ass fall off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think their friendship's over.
Yeah, I think, and which is, I could imagine, I don't know if Colton comes back after this.
Doesn't he die in the next episode?
No, I don't.
I recall him dying, but
all right, well, maybe he didn't die in these two episodes.
Yeah,
he's not one of Toombs' victims.
I recall him being dead.
All right, well, you know what? He went out being a douche.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
And it was fun. It's what he represented, right?
Yes,
more so than
exactly,
like the character
exactly.
himself. But once again, here's another Scully in the bathroom scene.
Yeah, they
not,
like
not,
to do
not
this.
As lascivious as the pilot. I
this
will
isn't
say.
The last time you'll see Scully like prepping for a bath, and then something happens, or just in her apartment.
Maybe she just like never showers.
Or just like not go into your apartment without like looking everywhere.
Yeah, I would say so. But, you know, there's
she
also,
gets to her gun pretty quickly.
There's also though this really random shot, in my opinion, of like the back of Scully's phone line.
Yes. Well, it's because they cut the line.
Oh, he cut the line.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just like, okay, why are we seeing the back of a telephone? Like, it was fun.
We're
in
seeing
the 90s,
it because Mulder was calling.
Right, and he got her answering machine.
Yes, and then it just kept ringing, and then they cut to the telephone line being cut, and it said, like, Scully, number whatever, whatever.
Gotcha, okay. I missed that. Maybe I was just thinking about, like, the days in the 90s
you
when
were too fixated
when
on
it was all about, like, the see-through telephone.
Yeah.
People were like, I wonder how this fancy gadgetry works.
No. They had cut it, and that's what they were showing you.
So, for some reason, I have a note here that Toombs has really good teeth acting. I guess this is, like, when he has his confrontation
with Scully.
Yeah,
so he does a lot of snarls.
Yeah, he's, like, making... He's feral at this point.
Yeah, he does what our dog does when she sees anybody.
Yeah, really any living figure.
Yeah, and even, sometimes us, too.
So, you know, Mulder's able to come in just in time. He's able to catch on as to what's happening, despite the phone lines being cut. And I think together, he and Scully are able to basically, like, dispatch of Toombs. And they got him here. At least.
Yeah,
or
so
attempting
they
to attack Scully in her home.
Exactly. And we think, like, okay, they've solved it. But in the next episode, they basically are telling us, like, no. Like, we only booked him on this charge.
Right, like, our assumption was, like, this, and then this, and this. And then you're like, yeah, actually, the more I think about it, the more it would be tough for Mulder to walk in. Like, okay, now we've got him. Let me mention the fact that he is almost a century old and has committed dozens of murders.
They would need much more proof, but...
And there was an interesting moment here at the end where, obviously, they leave Toombs behind, but there was, like, a flash of white light as Mulder and Scully walk away, and then it cuts back to Toombs for sort of like a to-be-continued thing. I thought that was an odd order of things.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was about, but I guess maybe just like television at the time.
Yeah, though it is
weird cuts.
It was interesting, though, that again, the writer said that they were surprised that there was a sequel being asked, because they sort of wrote like a to be continued in here, right? Or at least an open end of like, well, Toombs could come back because he's planning his escape.
Well, yes, I think you're just supposed to feel like it's creepy more than anything. Like, ooh, this guy could escape and continue to eat livers and they would never know and we would never see him. He would just be out there eating livers. Like, well, I don't think you're supposed to think like, well, can't wait to see what happens with Toombs.
Well, Angela, you've made me feel rather peckish for liver. So I'm going to take a quick break to tuck into some. You're going to hear from our sponsors as well. We'll talk to you in a second.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mm-mm, good.
Yum, liver.
Oh boy, goes with some nice onions.
Ew.
Is there a guy who eats onions, a serial killer who
liver.
Eats onions?
No, I don't think there's onions, but there's definitely not any more liver either.
Because man, if Toombs would have partnered up with him, that would have been a match made in heaven.
Ugh, gross. Let's not talk about liver anymore. Oh, wait.
We have another episode to get into. Let's get into the eponymous Toombs episode.
Toombs.
So what I was interested in as well is this is obviously the literal sequel to that episode. I noticed no previously on. Is The X-Files one of those shows that usually doesn't do a previously on?
They don't
like
usually, no, okay. But they'll do it sometimes, and it's more so for season to season.
Right. Or if it's like a two-part episode.
Yes,
so
to be continued, like previously on The X-Files, but like I don't remember that often happening. So
these people would have been like, all right, I guess we have to remember what happened 18 weeks ago with this guy. Even though they do a pretty good job of like filling in the blanks for like, hey, if you don't remember him or if you didn't happen to see the third episode ever, this is his deal.
Yeah, and I think also, I'm curious to see sort of what you thought about the first episode in comparison to this episode, because it's a very different tone.
Yeah, so the first episode is definitely more, I don't know, it was very interestingly paced, right? Like, it was odd that they got the guy halfway through the episode, but then they got let go,
yeah.
And it was proven that he actually
was. But it was a monster of the week. It was like, there's a mystery, we're going to solve the mystery, and then we're going to wrap it up.
Right, but this, there was no mystery. We knew he was capable of doing this, so we were almost in Mulder's seat the entire time of like, okay, we know it's him.
Yeah. How can he make this work?
Yeah. How is either Mulder going to make this work or how is Toombs going to get away and get his right. one more kill before hibernating?
And I do think what's interesting is in the first episode, it's them at the beginning of their journey. It's very much so like they're together, they're solving this, and you see a lot of confrontation between her and Colton, but she basically tells Colton to shove it and, you know, she's on Mulder's side. And then in this one, there's a lot of like trials and tribulations for Scully in regards to, coming to terms with the fact that they've been, previous after Squeeze up until now, all of those episodes are them sort of breaking the rules and like using a lot of unconventional methodologies or, investigatory, whatever they say, solutions to get results. And she even says a few times, like, we have a 75% success rate in the X-Files.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Which
you know.
Is out of above average for the Bureau.
Oh, very much so. And that's one of our first scenes. But before that, let's get into sort of our cold open here.
Sorry, I'm just excited.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Listen, we check back in here with Toombs. And this is another really interesting choice because we get so many shots both at the end of the last episode and the beginning of this one of like, okay, Toombs is going to escape. He just has to slip out through the grate. He's trying to open the door. But no, like, dude gets out on parole.
Yeah, he gets out because he's been a good boy.
He's been rehabilitated, which I did not expect. I thought more so like a guy can slip in between surfaces.
And he does not talk, if I'm correct, really, in the first episode, except for doing the lie detector. So what was he just having, like, casual chit-chats with this doctor? How did he convince this doctor that he was a normal human being? Because he's definitely not.
I don't know, though, because I think his literal life experience has probably made him... He is a sociopath
Fake
and a psychopath.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, but I think he's been able to be like, oh, if I just, like, mimic a personality.
I guess so. I just feel like he came across to me very weird. And so if I had been that doctor, I would have been like, you might be telling me you're fine, but your vibe is not fine.
Right. I think that also, I don't want to like project too much on this doctor. I can imagine maybe this is also a doctor who is like
deals with this a lot.
But he's also like looking for that rehabilitation, right? Like it might have just been a thing where the doctor's asking him all these questions, and Toombs is just nodding. And he's like, "Yep, that's it. Rehabilitated."
Yeah, exactly. And I think also it's. I mean, if his job is to like help this guy get past things, then. That he's done it. He can move on to the next case.
I don't know if you should let this guy out because he's so sweaty.
He must have something wrong with him.
Either that or like check at the air conditioning going on in
his
cell,
and
you
so
know?
I found it very strange in the court scene where they are, you know, sort of adjudicating his parole, so to speak. There is a doctor that's called to the stand, and she goes over all of his medical records and all these tests that they did on him.
Yeah.
And like, how did his tests come up negative? I don't understand. If he has a mutated gene.
Yeah, there's like all these like cockamamie reports about how like, oh, he doesn't have genetic defects. Now, maybe.
But didn't Scully find a genetic defect?
I don't know. Maybe it's a thing where
it doesn't appear on tests.
It's like an abnormal thing. Like you're not, unless you're not looking for it, if you're looking at the typical however many chromosomes, it's not going to be in there.
Yeah,
it's
that's
something
true.
Between the lines.
We need Liana.
we need resident scientist Liana Boris to break down how could, if there's a man who could squeeze through things, would his genetic
and needs to eat livers,
would his genetic defect not show up on a test? Or to your point, could this be like a larger, I don't know, I wouldn't say conspiracy.
I don't think so. I just think it was like negligence.
Yeah, because I feel like the government wouldn't want him released back.
I don't think
there,
the government had anything to do with this. It was just like pure negligence on behalf of the state.
Well, speaking of the government, let's talk about Skinner here.
Yes.
Because, out with the Blevins, in with the Skinner from the episodes that we're watching here. Can you talk to me a little bit about his personality and whether or not that was sort of gleaned in this introductory
episode? Well, I'm curious. I'm going to ask you before I give you anything.
Oh, classic tactic.
Yes. What kind of character do you think he is? Do you think he's a good guy? Do you think he's a bad guy? What did you feel about him?
I'm just surprised that, like, he is not... We had Blevins very clearly standing as the man, right? Like, oh, Agent Scully, what you're doing is most unorthodox. So I'm a little intrigued as to why, like...
Sauron.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Skinner is more so... has a personal touch with them. You know, he says, like, oh, Scully, I think your mind has become too opened by the X-Files.
Well, and I mean, the entirety of his scenes, the cigarette-smoking man is just standing there in the background.
But that happened with Blevins, too.
Yeah, but so you have to remember, if Assistant Director Skinner, Walter Skinner, is trying to help them while simultaneously also trying to be in the conspiracy guy. Like, you know, if he's trying to, like, follow the rules of whatever the cigarette smoking man is giving him or whatever conspiracy is going on, but also simultaneously trying to be on their side, like, that's probably really challenging. So,
okay, so interesting. So you think he is sort of, like, more down to earth than Blevins when it comes like, okay, I understand what you're trying to do, Scully, but you realize how complicated
this is. But he can't say that because he needs to come across as like sort of like demeaning them.
Okay, that's good. Like, you know, I'd rather have the good cop of Skinner than the bad cop of Blevins, it seems.
Well, yeah, and I think with Skinner, he's trying to be both good cop and bad cop. And I think, honestly, he's just trying to do his job.
Yeah.
Like, he's put in a position now where he was thrust to make, so he's the assistant director. Blevins was director.
Oh, okay.
So you deal with Skinner.
Oh, boring Blevins.
Yeah, you deal with Skinner now. And so, and then eventually there's another one because, you know, he gets pushed away.
Yeah, but there's so many people. There's so many brass in this here FBI.
But he's the main character for the rest of the series. So Skinner ends up being somebody who you do trust in some sense. Mm. But I think that his situation is that he was assigned to this, and it's not like it's the same with Scully. Like, she didn't plan on being somebody who was like, I'm gonna dedicate my life to the X-Files,
right?
But then she was put in this situation where now she has to like lie, she has to like do all this stuff that she probably wouldn't have done. And I think that that is kind of the same with Walter Skinner, where he is the boss, and he needs to be telling them what to do, but at the same time, you know, he can't argue with results, and he's also now in a position where he's finding out a bunch of stuff that he didn't know before, like conspiracy cover-ups. And
well, yeah, and we'll talk about that with the cigarette smoking man later. I'm glad you pointed that out, because I got none of that in this episode.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting then.
Well, it's tough, because I think, like, again, it seemed to me, at least in this episode,
it did seem to you, I think, that he was struggling, right?
Yeah, a little bit, I think. But I think I just more so thought of him as just the stand-in for Blevins. I did not see as much moral weighing as I think you're talking about. So I'm glad we'll explore that more.
And I think it's something for you to look for, too, because if you were to go back and watch this episode, a lot of the times when he's talking to Mulder and Scully, he keeps, like, kind of looking over his shoulder at the cigarette smoking man. Like, is he listening? Like, am I saying something that's making him mad? Like, it's just, like, so many angles.
So we're going to get to the hearing, as you mentioned before. There's this, you know, again, a weird sort of like Tombs mode section where he notices the Doctor sort of like pounding his pen on the clipboard.
Yes.
And I thought right there, okay, this Doctor's dead. Even from his first scene, I had like an inkling, but I'm like, I think he's eyeing the Doctor as his next victim. Like you said, it's going to end up being incidental, but
yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was purposeful at this moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just really needs that liver.
Yeah, and he's just looking like, ooh, I've been eyeing that liver ever since this duck walked into my cell.
And I'm wondering sort of how long he can last without having that last liver.
Yeah, I do wonder how much of his aggressive mania in this episode was based on just
desperation.
Like, I need that liver. I've got one more liver on my punch card. And
he's not dying. Like, maybe it's just slow, but like, I don't know how much time has passed between the first episode and this one, but like, at least a couple months.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Let's talk about Mulder here, because Mulder's going to say at one point, I don't care how it sounded, as long as it was the truth.
Oh, God, yeah.
Buddy, you could have cared more about how it sounded. Because
he doesn't, though. That's like one of his big flaws, is that he is just so enamored with finding out the truth, and he has gotten to this point where he just keeps hearing no, 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 that he's just like, fuck it, I'm not going to deal with that.
Well, it's just interesting, because in this hearing, he is brought to testify, and he is a runaway train. He has this, like, slideshow presentation that starts off fairly rote, and then it goes into like, but also he's 100 years old and he kills like, every 30 years.
And Scully just goes and sits next to him and just like sighs, because she's just like, why couldn't you have reeled yourself in? Because we know that he is this guy. All we need to do is do something to prove enough to keep him behind bars, to keep people safe. Like,
right.
That's all Scully cares about, is just like making it happen, not necessarily like
being right.
Not even that, but like telling, like, there's a way to say things without having to just like go full hog,
there's,
you know?
There's a way to, I think, package things.
They could have packaged it that he was like insane or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mulder also responds to that by denying all of it, saying like, well, you're just buying into, you know, what Skinner is telling you, all the BS that
they're
serving you.
You're like with the man now. Big Brother's real Jin.
Yeah, exactly. But we close things out by a lovely couple taking in a newly rehabilitated and released Eugene Toomes by saying, oh, there's a little room in the back, but I'm sure you'll be able to squeeze in.
Yeah, they say that, and it's like, LOL.
I wish the laugh track had come.
Wink.
Yeah, exactly, like the iris closes and the Looney Tunes song plays. Looney Tunes.
Scully's, like, worried about this couple, because she's like, oh, what if he goes for them? And Mulder's like, no, he's not going to do that, because it'd be, you know, he doesn't want a target on his back. He wants his freedom.
Well, so Mulder is going to, as Scully puts
as
it,
like
unbureaucratically
to do.
Pursue Toomes here. There's a very fun scene here where Toomes is apparently back on the job. He's like licking his fingers after he handles a dead rat.
So gross.
I don't know, unless there's bile there, I don't know exactly why.
He's just a nasty motherfucker.
I don't know, that doesn't feel linked at all to the rest of his character, like, oh, he just loves to lick those rats.
It doesn't feel linked to you, it's gross.
Yeah, but I don't think gross is a giant umbrella under things, you know?
I think that Toomes would for sure be licking rats.
Alright, well, listen, you can't judge
the Toomes vibe is very much
so. You can't judge
a
killer by the number of rats he licks, but there's a really funny Mulder moment here where Toomes is eyeing his possible next victim, a young woman getting something from a coffee truck, and Mulder steps in asking to find Heinrich, his Norwegian elk hound, who helps him hunt moose.
Yes, exactly. So that's, I think, a quintessential Mulder thing, too, where he's just sort of, like, cool under pressure and, like, still funny.
Yeah, like, yes, again, still, like, very sarcastic and very, like, over the
top.
Well,
he's also just, like, Toomes knows who he is, so he's just saying that to, like, mess with him, basically. Like, I'm not gonna let you take another liver. Like, I'm just not going to let you do it.
Right.
I'm going to stalk you.
Right.
Because then you won't be able to.
So meanwhile, Scully's going to go back to old Frank. It's been a little while very soon, actually, between these two episodes since we saw Frank, where he decides to provide this information of like, yeah, one of these years, there were four bodies that were found. One of them was not. I believe that Toomes, I don't know, went whole hog on this body and knew that it would incriminate him, and therefore he hid it somewhere.
Yeah, like he did something that would identify him, and so he hid it.
Which I guess in this case was what, just like him going a little too chew happy on the body?
Yeah, so he bit the liver out instead of just grabbing it. And so
was he feeling rather peckish that day?
I guess, so there were dental marks.
Or maybe his hands were dirty. Even though, I don't know, according to you, he would like lick them and shove his hands in his mouth.
Definitely would. But yeah, so they basically, which I think, okay, Frank, why didn't you mention this previously? This seems like information.
You never asked.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And Scully's like, where would we even begin to look for this?
I've got a great idea.
Yeah, and he just like pulls it out of his butt. Like, he knows exactly
Frank
where he's
like the king of hunches.
Yeah, Frank is psychic.
Frank has a baller next 3 minutes where he's like, I can tell you what happened. I can tell you where we're going, and I can find the exact location.
Yeah, so they're using a pretty cool, like, technology, which...
Yeah, it's like something out of, like, archaeology.
Yeah, so they're using something where it's, like, pinging down into the ground and sending back signals so that it's telling you if there is something there, and then somebody who's...
It's like a big-ass metal detector.
Yeah, but it's, like, more about, like, sonic waves, I think. Mm-hmm. And so then some guy is, like, able to read that and tell them if it's a hole or another rock or something else. So they're in a factory, and they're just sort of going over, like, the floor very slowly, and then Frank just wheels away in his wheelchair.
He's like, it's right here.
Yeah, and he starts yelling, here.
I was so, like,
it was far from where they were looking too. Like, they would have been there forever.
And how much has he been looking over, like, the schematics of the fact? Like, I don't know.
No, that was a hunch. He wasn't looking. He just knew.
Is this man magic?
I think he might be.
I honestly, there was a brief glimpse of time, Angela. I think that was a commercial break where I'm like, I think Frank might be in it with Toombs.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he did come across like it was a little too easy when Scully went to see him, like, oh, yeah, by the way, there's this evidence. Let's go. Here it is. We found it.
Yeah, like, maybe it was just for the sake of, like, yada yada.
Keeping things
plot.
Going.
Or maybe Frank has, like, a very special hat that he wears. That
does wear a very special hat.
It's his thinking cap.
He wears, like, one of those fisherman hats.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this is what I did to solve. This is my crime-solving hat.
I would love that. But no, Frank just seems to know things, and I think that that's not supposed to mean anything other than he's just very in tune with this case. Like, mm-hmm. it's preoccupied him so much.
It's something he's been thinking about for, what, like, 30 years?
So he just knows, yeah. I think that's more the situation at hand.
Coming back, we find yet another bald man that Angela, oh boy,
this was rough for me. So this guy gets out of his, or is walking to his car, mm-hmm. and his shoulders are insane. He's wearing, like, a blue jacket that comes across a little purpley via the screen.
Yeah, like the Toombs vision.
Yeah, the Toombs vision. But he has, like, basketballs under his shoulders.
Yeah,
they were weird, right?
I know, it's a little bit of, like, shades of the 80s. He was, like, a linebacker doing business. Like, he was wearing shoulder pads for some reason.
Yeah, it was very strange. I just couldn't get over it.
So he ends up going home here. He changes out his ridiculous shoulders into a more conservative sweater. And we get, like, so much delicious old school XL.
Oh, my Angela. God. This guy is just, like, reports, reports, reports.
Like, he's literally, it cuts back to no less, I think, than five times. Yeah. Just sitting at the computer, like, pressing the enter key.
Yeah, yeah. This reminds me of when I was younger and I used to talk about what my dad did at work. And I would just say, like, type, type, type. Yes, yes, yes. No, no, no.
I'm assuming that's what it said in the script.
Yeah, like, probably. Like, this is your inner monologue. Very businessy. But yeah, it was just a bunch of, like, weird graphs and numbers and
stuff. Yeah, there was, like, a pie chart, but it was just, like, moving down a spreadsheet. I just love that it's, like, do busy work, and he's like, I don't know what to do without my big shoulders. Who is this man?
Also, just, like, why is this guy coming home and immediately getting on the computer when his poor wife...
Oh, it's
this bugged me to death. Because this lady is taking care of this baby, and then she just has to
She's taking care of robo-toddler.
Yeah, robo-toddler. That was weird. But... She's like, I think I'll go watch TV in bed. And he's like, mm-hmm. And she's like, finally getting to go watch TV in bed.
Like, finally able to, like, let her hair down, unwind from the
day. In her giant t-shirt pajamas.
Which we should notice, I think maybe in some transition between episode 1 and episode 21, we have officially transitioned from a societal perspective between nightgown and big t-shirts.
And big t-shirt.
For appropriate sleep
We haven't
there.
Quite gotten to PJ pants yet, but we'll get
time.
There. And then... She has to snake the toilet.
Yeah.
This is... call your husband. He's just typing on pie charts.
No, listen, he's got dainty fingers. He needs them for Excel. Why
waste
them?
It's like you with your non-callousy hands.
Well, listen, if you had told me to snake a toilet, I would attempt to do so.
Okay. Would you know what the snake was?
I would... No, I would look for something that was more sort of shaped like a snake.
I knew it.
I mean, it was like some sort of, like, plastic instrument that's shaped like a snake.
Yeah,
like,
so, I mean,
reference.
Either way, she thinks there's a clog in the toilet. The toilet, first of all, has that quintessential 90s blue-green water.
Yeah, so this is like the, oh, we got to clean the toilet, so like this
so
is...
So there was something you could put in the toilet tank that would, like, consistently clean every time.
Know,
it's like a round hockey puck that's blue.
It's like a urinal cake for toilets.
Yeah, you put it in the top and it's Clorox and it just, like, consistently cleans it, but
that's
it keeps
just,
the water
that's
blue.
That's just a grody color. I mean, I can understand why Toombs was like seeking it out because it's just a nasty ass color for your toilet.
Yeah, so basically Toombs is coming through the sewer.
Or
Mulder,
attempting to.
Yeah, so Mulder follows him even though he's told by Skinner to stay away from Toombs.
Yeah.
Like, do not do anything with Toombs.
Yeah, like, listen, like, I know what you're trying to do. He's a regular old person now. The case has been dropped. Stop doing this. But Mulder is now like...
Well, the case has been dropped because I think we forgot to talk about how Toombs fakes...
No, that's coming up.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, like, he suspects that Toombs is in the house. He goes to the house. He tells them that. But by the time that he gets there...
he gets to the door and he's like, well, I was working on my Excel charts. What's the meaning of this?
Toombs has already gone out the window.
And Toombs is already gone. I did fear for a second because, again, I was grateful that you've really limited my viewing to the X-Files from, like, things that put children in danger. But when he was coming out through the toilet, I was like, he goes near that robo-toddler. I swear to God.
She's cute, too. Yeah. There are going to be some episodes that we watch that are not going to be great.
This poor, like, hard-worked mother. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Big Shoulders Man should have died. I would have been fine. It's clear
that she would have been a single mom.
But he's neglecting his family in honor of Excel.
No, he's not. He's just not very tuned in emotionally.
I guess so.
He's providing them with resources.
I think they need to go to therapy.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I think this was a wake-up call.
After this, they do. I'm like, traumatized.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize there could have been somebody in the house. I was too busy focused on my charts.
Yeah,
I mean, didn't think about what's behind the numbers. The people, man.
Oh my God. Anyway,
So Mulder and Scully have a conversation in Mulder's disgusting car. We find out here that, and you enlightened me to this, Mulder's a big baseball fan. He's
yeah.
a reference to listening to multiple baseball games. He's going to advise Scully, like, hey, if you tune into the Pete Rose late night show, it's going to be some great baseball
talk. Mulder has some character traits that are, like, quintessentially 90s man.
It reminds me of, like, early Boy Meets World, but, like, yes. very much like, oh, we love baseball specifically.
Yeah, it's like the cool sport to like. And like when he is like at home, like he's always watching either baseball or like old horror movies.
Uh-huh.
So I think that, yeah, there's, you know, something to be said there for character development, I guess, but kind of makes him a little basic.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I guess if a lot of like white guys were enjoying baseball in the 90s, like maybe Fox Mulder can have a little bit of basic tendencies.
Yes,
right? He doesn't
I guess
have to
that's
be a goober
true.
With everything.
Spooky.
Spooky. I don't know. What would be the spookiest sport?
Spookiest sport. Nighttime curling.
Ooh, nighttime curling. You can't see where the stone's going. What's this, like,
I
a hockey rink where they just, like, turn off
I
the
don't
light?
Know.
No, actually, you know, I love this, though, because it's almost like nighttime bowling. Like, there's neon lights.
That would have been better.
It's neon lights going off. There's disco music playing while you
well, disco's not spooky.
Curl the stone or whatever.
Yeah, well, either way, we talked about this earlier, I think, the mm-hmm. car scene where she says something pretty significant to Mulder, where to sum up, you know, that she's on his team.
Yeah. She says, I wouldn't put myself on the line for anybody but you. There's some cute, like, I wouldn't say will they, won't they, but definitely
it's
like
a little bit there though.
I mean, you have the whole thing like, oh, if there's iced tea in this bag, it must be love. And then she fakes him out with the root beer.
Yeah, no, they do that a lot. I think they're very like playful in their platonic relationship at this point that, you know, neither of them are serious about it. And it's very jokey, but there is like, I think, chemistry.
I mean, it's also the end of season one. So maybe that's representative. But let me also just say team iced tea above team root beer any day of the week.
I like root beer.
I'm not a fan of the taste of it.
I don't really drink soda, but if I had to, I'd have a nice cold root beer.
Would you rather have it over an iced tea, though?
Well, no, iced tea proves it's unsweetened.
I don't know.
See, that's the thing.
I don't know, actually. I feel like back in that day,
it was like a Snapple.
Which was sweetened. Like, I don't think they'd gone really in the direction of, like, diet soda, diet drinks at that point.
Well, and I don't even want a diet drink. I'll take a regular unsweetened iced tea.
Well, something that is not so sweetened, much like Angela's tea preference, is the fact that Toombs is in Mulder's trunk.
Yeah, so basically, you were very freaked out by this. You were not okay with it.
I mean, he was in his trunk.
Yeah, he was in his trunk.
We had this really nice scene between Mulder and Scully, and it's like, oh, right, there's still a serial killer on the loose, and he is now in Mulder's trunk.
Yeah, so they're going to switch spots. Scully's like, I will, Mulder, you need to go get some sleep. Like, yeah. I'll cover for you. He gives her his sandwich, which he's only taken one bite out of. And this was very confusing to you, because after Mulder leaves, she looks at the sandwich as if it's a clue.
Yeah, I was very confused by this. Like, wait, does she now suspect that Mulder is Toombs?
Or does she know that, like, Toombs is there because he had the sandwich? Like, it was unclear.
Yeah, he was the one who took the bite out of the sandwich instead of Mulder. He just couldn't, like,
yeah.
He's like, oh, liverwurst, I guess this is close enough.
Yeah, so you're supposed to think that Toombs is now in the trunk and he's gonna kill Mulder. Like, he's
right.
gonna murder him, but no.
Which is interesting, because you would wonder, oh, why not just, like, finish the job with Scully, right?
Right, or...
But that's not the case.
He just wants to get rid of them. So he is gonna frame Mulder by going into Mulder's apartment and taking Mulder's shoes and beating the crap out of himself.
Yeah,
dislocate his shoulder. Like,
yeah, what's that line from Liar Liar? Like, I'm beating the snot out of myself,
yeah,
or something. Like,
yeah.
That's, he's Jim Carrey in the bathroom. He's clawing at his face, putting Mulder's shoe kick himself in the face, which I guess he is sort of like contortionist, so I guess he could kick himself in the face with Mulder's shoe.
And this is, I think, when we find out afterwards that Mulder cannot go near tombs. This is when this happens.
Because this is when he gets the cease and desist. I mean, Mulder does a very great job of like dressing it down immediately. Like any competent CSI can tell you that the angle with which the shoe is coming,
the pressure point.
Like there was clearly,
there was no foot in the shoe.
I am not Chuck Norris. I do not kick a man in the face, but they don't want to hear it. I think there is a bit of the spooky bias of it all.
Well, and I think Skinner's just like, stop. Like, just stop. Like, I mean, you're making my life hard.
He also invokes the first name. He calls Mulder Fox.
Yeah, well, so maybe, he does that a lot, actually.
Maybe Skinner the guidance counselor of the X-Files? Like, do they have to consistently visit him? And he's like, why are you guys doing this?
A little bit, I think. It's just like he's called into the principal's office all the time because they're always doing something that's like a pain in the butt.
Skinners are known to be principals, so I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess so.
Also, Skinner has a very odd way of putting on glasses. He like takes it by the ends and puts it on.
He, again, also has those like gold-rimmed glasses.
So what, he doesn't want to scuff the merchandise?
No, he just has a weird way of putting on glasses. I was just pointing out that they were similar.
Speaking of fun, weird stuff, let's go to the crime lab here, because even though we get some conventional, you know, practical effects with tombs, we get some fun 3D bite mark.
Yeah, so Scully has initially partnered with a doctor who is helping her excavate the remains of the skeleton
he seems into it.
Yeah, he's bones. You know, he wants to like get at that.
Well, they did find bones earlier.
Yeah, and the first time she meets with him, he basically tells her, like, I can't say this on record because it's not like I have to excavate more of the skeleton, but like this person's face is the missing victim.
Yeah, he does a facial reconstruct of like, oh, just so you know, this is the person that Frank had a picture of. It's very clear this person. I can't technically say it, but off the record.
Yeah, because
you're
it's
right.
Like new technology that wouldn't prove anything. But later, he does, through the inspiration of Sandwich, discover that
as all great inspirations come,
so
through
Scully,
a sandwich.
And initially they did note that there had been gnaw marks on the skeleton, but he thought they were rats. But Scully goes back and they excavate
more. Which
I'm
assuming Tombs probably would have licked those rats after they had bitten.
Yes, and luckily for them, they did a full dental X-ray set while he was in the sanitarium, which is, I think, an old school term for that. But they are able to match up the dental bite marks on the skeleton with his dental records and game, set, match. It was him.
But it's too late, as here it comes. I predicted this in like minute 3, and here it's like minute 43. It finally happens. Here comes Dr. Monty.
It's a check-in.
It's the final countdown before for poor Dr. Monty. Basically, like, Tombs has also now, he's made his room his own. I don't think this couple is going to complain, considering how many released people from the sanitarium they've had in their residence.
They're very helpful.
They're very much like, let's just put our heads down, and as long as they're not doing any sort of like bodily harm to anybody, it's fine. He has, you know, made his now little paper mache nest, and basically they're like, yeah, we're going to go out for the night, have a great time.
Yeah, they don't question it.
Great time to murder.
And then the doctor comes in and he asks him, he's like, why the newspapers, Victor? And he's like, are you making paper mache? And he goes, Tombs goes, yes. And then he goes, oh, I didn't realize you had an interest in art. He goes, yes. He's so creepy.
Yeah, maybe he just only knows how to say yes. Sort of like
a robot.
Like the Vincent Van D'Onofrio, like sugar and water.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like bug person.
Exactly. So, yeah, I guess he's making his nest.
So, I mean, he's making his nest, but now he has claimed his fifth victim, which means it's time to go back to the homestead. Different homestead here, though. Scully and Mulder, they figure out what's happening, and they track him to his nest, which is now in the underskirts of a mall.
Well, because they tore down...
Let's go to the mall today.
Yeah, they tore down the building where he used to have an apartment, and they built a mall on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like,
paved paradise and put up a mall.
Exactly. So they were like, where would his nest be in relation to the mall that we're in right now? And they discover a hatch underneath the escalator.
They go down the hatch. And I guess, you know, Tombs is you know, not nearly as swarthy as Desmond.
Yeah, and there's a cute little moment where Scully's like, I'll go first, and Mulder's like, no, you get the next mutant.
Which I'm assuming she does.
Yeah, like, I'm sure
they hold down to that bet.
And he has to squeeze in.
I will say I always sort of had a fantasy as a kid specifically of like,
oh boy,
wouldn't it be cool to be in a mall overnight?
I think that's a pretty
typical
fantasy.
I think that has probably
fantasy.
Like pumped my thought bubble at this point of like, well, things can work in the mall after hours.
Underneath the escalator, specifically.
Yeah.
So Mulder like squeezes through all these little tunnels and is getting covered in bile, and it's so disgusting. I don't understand why he had to go all the way to the nest. Like, I guess he didn't know the nest was there. So
right. I think he was trying to scope out the area to basically find evidence. Like, he can't just be like, hey, people, there's goo down here.
I just felt like he, as soon as he saw it, like, should have gone back and been like, the nest is here. Like, let's come up with a plan. Because he immediately, like, puts his hand into the hole and Victor jumps out and tries to kill him.
That was not a good plan. Without any sort of clearance.
Yeah.
You know, and at least shine your flashlight in there just a little bit. But yeah, here comes completely naked Tombs.
Naked bile covered Tombs.
Yeah, maybe he was like either about to start hibernation. That's always the worst, right? Like you're about to drift off into sleep and then like somebody bothers
you. Well, he hadn't closed the hole yet, so I think that he was still sort of finishing the nest.
Unless that's sort of his like a vent, because look, apparently he gets hot in his sleep. I'm assuming he sweats a lot.
You're very fixated on his sweatiness.
He's so sweaty.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly were just spraying him down every second, but ugh, gross.
So basically, Mulder is able to, like, barely crawl his way out, and so they, like, frantically go to turn the escalator on. I didn't realize...
Yeah, no, so Mulder, like, gets up there and just immediately turns the escalator on.
I didn't realize, and maybe this was back in the 90s when people were more trusting in others, that I thought you needed a key to get to that
box.
You
probably do. I think it's more just, like, lucky that they didn't.
And Tombs gets a little too much squeeze, if you will, as he gets squished underneath the escalator.
Yeah, you just see, like, blood coming up on top.
Which is this... I mean, it's gruesome more in thought than in execution, because obviously we don't see the body being squished, but that's, like, all you need to see.
Psychologically, it's disgusting.
Hopefully they cleaned it.
No, that's how it is now. You can go visit it.
Oh, yeah, you can visit the official filming of that, and there's still blood flowing through 20-plus years later to this day.
No, you silly goose. So, yeah, he's dead. Bye, Tombs.
Bye, Tombs. 2-2 for Tombs. Two episodes as well. So, yeah, we get a little bit of, like, a debrief here where basically, like, Skinner turns to Cigarette Smoking Man and is like, can you believe this shit? And Cigarette Smoking Man's like, yes, I do.
Yeah, so that's where you're supposed to realize that Skinner, I think, is somebody who is not in the know about the conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Like, or in general, like, isn't in the know about anything spooky.
He seems to be someone who is, like, trying his best.
Yeah, and, like, even though the Cigarette Smoking Man is there and is pulling his strings in some regard, like, to Skinner, he's just somebody high up in the FBI. He's just somebody who's, like, a government official, you know? So it's not like he knows anything about anything, and it's not even that he knows a lot about the X-Files. They're just, like, his people.
So... The Cigarette Smoking Man, is this the first time he talks in the series?
I care. I don't know. Maybe?
It has the gravity of it happening, so I don't know if that's
up. If it's not the first time that he's talked, it's the first time that, like, he's spoken in a way that is, like, direct.
Right, so he's been Tombsing it before, just yes. Yes.
Potentially, yes.
So, I mean, this is something big because it not only shows that A, this character is capable of speaking, but also B, that he's not like these other people who are just like, duh, clearly this is ridiculous. He's like, no, it's real, but I want to make sure that people don't find out about it.
Yeah. And like, what is Mulder doing? And like, why is he allowing Mulder to continue at all? You know, so there's all these questions that rise up about that.
Well, I'll tell you what Mulder's doing. He is observing a cocoon in a tree.
He's feeling very
like
existential.
Like a freshman poetry student.
Yes, exactly.
Sort of like, wow, this room, a change is coming. I truly feel it, a metamorphosis.
Yeah, so I think that that's supposed to be, because this episode is coming right towards the end of the season. I think there's only a couple episodes left, and like the end of the first season is pretty significant. It's like, we've been doing this for like a while now. Like, what's going to happen to the X-Files? Like, are we going to be able to continue? So we'll see.
Yeah, I just remember, again, it takes me back to like those days when I feel like a lot of children's media was all about caterpillar metamorphosis specifically. So I remember just seeing like so many cocoons, caterpillars to learn all about the stages of life.
Oh, so you're not talking about Hilary Duff's album Metamorphosis?
I don't think so.
It's a shame. It's really good.
Is that her debut album?
It was, yes.
Okay, so she called... Oh, was that supposed to represent like her change from being just Lizzie McGuire to like being a capital A artist?
It's great, actually. This is a really quality.
Maybe if this had been made at a different time, they could have played a song from Hilary Duff's Metamorphosis to really nail home the point.
Yes.
Coming Clean, is that from that album?
That is from that album,
okay, that's the only one that I know.
Well, Michael, what do you think?
I enjoyed it. You know, it was definitely freakier, and I think it was good to sort of have this happen after... Like, I think the first episode was pretty freaky, but this was real freaky.
Yeah, this was, like, gross freaky.
Yeah, and I liked it, because, again, it was not too much on...
And you could almost see it being, like, real. Like, you could almost see it, like, there could be a mutant out there that eats livers. And even the aspect of it being a mutant that eats livers, it's like a home invader. It's like a murderer. you know? So I think that that's, you know, pretty significant when it comes to like reality based stuff.
Yeah, plus, like, we got to get introduced to a couple of big characters here. We got furthering the narrative of Scully specifically separating herself from where she came to where she's going.
Yes, and also sort of her putting her flag in the Mulder X-Files camp.
Yeah, exactly. She's making a new Mulder, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm enjoying it. I like sort of, like, the disparate tone from the pilot in many ways. You know, if this is sort of, like, the two sides of the X-Files, in a manner of speaking, in terms of stuff that we explore, I'm very excited to see, because this was also a pretty creative idea,
yeah,
too, of like, oh, a contortionist mutant who feasts on livers every 30 years. Like, that is a Mad Lib in and of itself.
Yeah, and you have to remember that the X-Files is the first one to do a lot of this stuff, so you'll see a lot of things nowadays where, like, it is super creative in the way that they're, like, coming up with villains and, like, coming up with, like, weird serial killers and, like, having to prove things, and it's all sort of stemmed from the X-Files.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, we gotta do something that we started last week, the Spook of the Week, who is, like, the weirdest person. I mean, this is a runaway.
Yeah, it's right? Tombs, right?
It's Tombs, for both episodes.
Yeah, I agree. Think
that, like, it's very clear, it's palpable as the sweat on his forehead.
Yeah, he, like, was gross.
He purposely, Doug Hutchison purposely does it in an extremely off-putting way. That was very purposefully done to know that there would be a podcast being done 25 years yeah. down the line that would identify him as a Spook of the Week for both episodes he appears
yeah,
in.
He definitely earned the title, for sure.
And I think Doug Hutchison real-life Spook of the Week as well, considering what he ends up doing.
Very much so. Eek. But yeah, I agree with you there. He was creepy.
Yeah. So, speaking of, you know, what's to come down the line, so we're actually going to go back a little bit in time. You know, we did take a momentary leap forward
yes.
to sort of follow up on the Tombs thing of it all, but we're going back a bit to the status quo. We are going back to one episode next week, and we're going a little bit back in time from episode 21. We're going to season 1, episode 10, Fallen Angel.
Yeah, so I was trying to come up with the next episode for us to watch, and there are a few Monster of the Week episodes that we are skipping in season 1 that I do have quite a love for, including Ice, which was one.
Ice Baby,
which was one that I thought would be fun to watch, but if I'm trying to give you a good understanding of the overall story of the X-Files, I think Fallen Angel will be good. It introduces us to a few things.
Okay.
It's also within the main arc. And it'll lead us into the season finale of season 1, which will be a little bit more helpful than a Monster of the Week episode, which will just be sort of siloed by itself.
Can I make a guess as to what the episode's going to be about next time?
I would be happy to hear it.
Just looking at the title, Fallen Angel. So I feel like we've gone a little ridiculous with things. Let's continue to go ridiculous. I think there is a religious community that finds that finds a creature that they claim is an angel, but it turns out is actually an alien. And so now Mulder essentially and Scully have to deal with, like, a very, you know, evangelical religious group that is attempting to stop their investigation because they believe it's an angel.
That's not this episode, but it's a good guess for another one, I
think. Interesting. Okay. So I like that as well. How many times do I incidentally guess
the
plot of future X-Files episodes?
Yeah, no, I do think that there's a future episodes where there's angels involved, but for this episode, not specifically.
Wait, there are future episodes where there are angels involved?
The thought of angels, okay, the idea of angels. But no. Incorrect.
All Scullies go to heaven coming.
We'll have to see how close you really were.
All right, so we shall see next week. And we want to hear from you all out there, whether this is your first time watching The X-Files or not. You can let us know your thoughts on Twitter. Angela is at Ange Pelagi. I'm at A Mike Bloom Type. And of course, we are at Post-Show Recaps. Or if you want to send us an email, you have several ways of doing so. Either xfiles@postshowrecaps.com or bloomfiles@postshowrecaps.com. Just so you know, Angela and I are sort of, we're in our own nest right now. We are banking these podcasts just because of availability. So the time this is being released is not the time that it is recorded. So apologies, we are not going to read your feedback immediately. I think what we are planning to do is we are actually going to wrap up season 1 in a couple of weeks from now. And I think then we're going to get to some of your feedback. So it might take a little bit of time, hopefully not 30 years, but send us your thoughts about these two episodes, about the pilot, because we'd love to hear about your thoughts as well. Again, depending on your level of expertise as an X-Files fan. And that being said, if you are an X-Files big fan and you know what's coming and you want to ask, you know, questions about future events, please make sure that it's for Angela eyes only. You can do that by just putting like in all caps for Angela in your feedback email so that I can know to just pass that by and send it off to her so I do not spoil myself on what's to come over the course of our journey here.
God forbid.
God forbid. I want to redact that in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we go. We're going to move on to Fallen Angel next week. We're going to head out here. I have a date with a jar of bile and a few dead rats.
And I have to go shopping for shoulder pads.
Exactly. We're going to make a night of it. But Angela, thank you so much for your great work. Thank you all so much for listening. We're going to be back next week covering season 1, episode 10 of Fallen Angel. But for now, case closed.